I'm surrounded by so many IoT bits. I've got, how many are there? 14 downlights sitting down there. And for those of you who aren't aware of what a downlight is, it's a light that faces down. This is Aussie naming for you. Apparently, you call them different things in different parts of the world. But yeah, downlights are literally these little suckers here. I'm going to talk more about these in a moment because I do want to get the formalities out of the way first, because I do have a sponsor to talk about this week, a sponsor I've had many times before, which is safepass.me. So SafePass, as I've mentioned in the past, provide a service for you to check your passwords in your organization against a list of known passwords that just so happens to come from a little service that I run. So thank you very much for SafePass. Financial stuffing is currently the biggest threat to organizations. Fair call. It is a massive thing at the moment. Find out how you can protect your network right now with safepass.me. So please check the sponsor out. They help me do what I do, which is partly this and partly other things I'm going to talk about today. It is a little bit later for me. It's just after 6 p.m. We were out having some neighborly cheer. Let's call it that. I'm not drinking beer now because I need to try and recover from the other ones. Now, it was very, very mild. It was a very, very, like, literally a two Heineken affair. So, anyway, moving on. I do have a few things today, but not like a lot of stuff, in part because a very, very big part of my week has gone on an all-new project, which is very different to everything that I have done before. It is something I'm going to be talking about soon. It is something that's going to be of interest to you if the things that I generally do are of interest to you. But it's actually kind of cool, and it's something that I've wanted to do for a while, but I just needed to devote time. So one of the things that Charlotte, my fiance, is helping me do is actually like project manage my life a little bit. So here's my problem. Partly illustrated by the fact that these. I've got so much stuff around me that I look at and I get distracted by because I just want to go and play with new shiny stuff. I'll talk about the 3D printer in a moment too. So my problem is that I get up and I get up and I got on average 25 emails overnight, and I'll go through those, and some of them, you know what it's like. Some of them you just get rid of straight away, and the other ones you've got to actually do stuff for, and I get through that, and then life takes hold, and then suddenly you're halfway through the day, and then you see something shiny, and the rest of your day just disappears. And I have trouble actually spending a lot of time focusing on something. So she is helping me keep track, or rather keep on track, with this new project. So it is something which is happening, and I'm going to start talking about it soon because I think we're going to start teasing it a little bit early on as well. So there is that. Now, let me talk about the IoT stuff. I'm going to do this completely out of order to what's actually in my list. And I don't actually think I have much in the way of actual cyber stuff today as well, which is interesting. Cyber, of course, being the security side of things. So 14 of these suckers sitting down there on the floor. These are RGB LEDs for the folks in Oz. I bought these from Oz Smart Things, who I've bought lots of things from now because we get them from Australia, we get them fast, and they're really well priced as well. Now, every one of these is an internet-connected device insofar as it does actually connect to your Wi-Fi. This is not a Zigbee-based device. I am yet to see any decent Zigbee-based lights. Certainly all the ones that I've been finding do connect directly to the Wi-Fi. They will connect to the 2-year app. Once they're in the 2-year app, they get exposed in Home Assistant. So the reason I've got a bunch of them down here is I've got various places around the house I want to start putting them, including, it's a little bit hard to see it with the camera back there, if I probably move the camera up, but a little bit higher on my wall back there, there's two more lights on the ceiling. So the plan is to get a couple of these up there, and then a bunch more of the other ones will start replacing other halogen lights that I've got throughout the house. And as I said before, halogen lights are a pain in the ass because they burn super, super hot. They use a lot of electricity. They blow light bulbs really frequently. These suckers here should have none of those problems. Plus, they're internet connected for maximum fun. I've got, I think, in total 27 Shelly ones sitting in my cupboard over there as well. So the Sparky, who you may know as an electrician, is coming around next week with a mate as well to help me install as many of those as possible. So I've got a lot of automation coming up. One of the things I was just doing is installing these little Akero motion sensors into the kids' bathrooms. So the kids have each of their own room. Each room has its own bathroom and its own walk-in robe. And there's a couple of things that annoy the hell out of me with the way these kids manage their room. One, constantly leave the lights on in both the bathroom and in the walk-in robe. And I'll walk in there, they're at school or something, I'm like, why are all the lights on? And two, always leaving the fan on in their room. So what I'm doing is installing these into the bathroom so I can see when there's motion. If they're in there having a shower or something like that, they're not cameras, they're motion sensors. They're in there having a shower or brushing their teeth or something, motion sensor will see them. When there is no motion for a period of, I don't know, let's say 15 minutes, then I can start triggering stuff off. So I can trigger the light off. The one in the cupboard, I'm just going to trigger off if their room hasn't seen motion for 15 minutes. I've had motion sensors in their rooms for probably the last 6 months or something because it triggers lights on when they come into the room. And I'm also getting a whole bunch more of the little temperature sensors as well, also Akero. And they will go into the bathroom because not only can they sense temperature, but they can sense humidity. So then I can start to say, okay, if the humidity is at a certain level, then keep the fan on. And once it sort of clears out all the steamy air, well, then we can turn the fan off. And there's just now enough stuff in here. And there'll be three Shellys, one on the fan in the bathroom, one on the light in the bathroom, one on the light in the cupboard. So there's now enough bits and pieces to make lights go off when they shouldn't be on. And it's going to save me some of my sanity, which is fantastic. So I'm looking forward to doing that. That's going to be a next week thing. There'll be a bunch more Shellys on other parts of the house, which I just wanted to tie into the automations. In what will sound like the most first world of problems, when my evening scene comes on at the moment, it doesn't turn on the lights in the fish tank. So I've got like a massive, it's bigger than my arm span, but a massive in-wall fish tank built into the house, which was here when I got here. It's kind of nice. It's got lights on it. I would like those to come on automatically. So when the Shellys go into the lights there, I'll be able to control that too. Look at the comments. Starwave, does the light have different colors? Yeah, so that's the whole point of an RGB LED. So there are already other locations in the house where there are previously renovations done where the halogens were replaced with just white LEDs. And what tends to happen is a bunch of these, not these ones in particular, but this style of downlight, and these are, I believe, 90 mil cutouts they require. They have like temperature switches on there. So you can go like a cool light, a medium light, or a warm light, and you literally have to move the toggle, chuck it up in the roof, and then if you change your mind later on, you pull it out of the roof and you change the toggle. But these are entirely instant-enabled, red, green, blue. Now, my biggest complaints with these one in particular is it's very hard to get them nice and dim. So particularly in some parts of the house, like, say, down where the TV is, I would actually like to make them much dimmer than what they're able to do. I also don't actually want to change the colors in the roof where the TV is, just the way the lighting is there, and I've got a big mirror with Philips Hue all the way around it. I've shown that in one of my previous videos. I don't really need much light. So one of the problems is actually getting LEDs where the light level can go really low without flicker as well. So that is one of the challenges there. Other things on the IoT front, I've still got my Lemetric sitting here. So the little Lemetric is ticking over 3.53 million subscribers on Have I Been Pwned at the moment, which is nice. I've done a whole bunch of stuff around making sure that Charlotte's and my devices are identified when they're coming and going from the house. I'm not sure what I'm going to do with it yet, but I can start to tie that into other things as well. And just a few other sort of cleanup things. Like once you start getting so many different individual devices on the network, it does become a little bit of management effort. Speaking of network, and I'm going to tweet this shortly as well. This looks like another Ubiquiti Wi-Fi access point, which is actually wired into the switch over there. And it is, but this is also Wi-Fi 6. So this is one of the first Wi-Fi 6 access points Ubiquiti has done. So I'm not quite sure what I'm going to do with it, but they sent me one and I thought, okay, I'll plug it in. What could get wrong? I'll figure out where I'm going to put it. And again, in the most first world of problems, when I was adopting this into the network, I noticed that the access point in my boat shed is no longer working. So I've got to figure out why that is, because it's one of the access points which has a secondary port which has got the camera into it as well. So unfortunately, because the camera is dependent on the access point, the camera in the boat shed is not working at the moment. So I am making a rather large number of dependencies for myself. I am very conscious of that. Looking at the comments here, so Starways, I remember when I was in Switzerland for a holiday. In fact, I was writing something about that in my new project just yesterday. Switzerland for a holiday. The hotel room had a temperature regulator that was really cool. So this is one of my next challenges. I would really like to have temperature management, which means what I really want to do is I want to be able to control my air conditioning via the power of the internet. Now, in some parts of the world, there is things like Nest that is apparently incompatible with Australian systems. I don't know the mechanics of why that is the case. I have a Daikon unit here. Daikon, you know the one. I have that here. There are actually two separate units here in the house. One does sort of most of the bedrooms and the other one does the other parts of the house. Two big units outside. It's all ducted, so every room has got ducts up there. If you're, let's say you're in Europe now, possibly this time of day, in the northern parts, you don't have Ekin. You have those big bar heaters with the oil that warms up. Different thing for us. So I would love to actually get these replaced because it's got panels on the wall that feel like they're from the 80s. Now, we just had an air conditioning failure, actually. Unfortunately, we had a lot of water that ended up running through the roof and had a guy out fixing it just this week. And we had to pull out some old documentation. It looks like the system's about 13 years old. So I've been here for just over 5 years. So it was kind of oldish when I got here. Daikon does have an IoT-enabled interface. In fact, there is a Home Assistant integration. I'm just not sure it works with mine. So if, particularly if you're in Australia and you have a good IoT solution on your Daikon air conditioner, please drop me a DM via Twitter and let me know, because I really want to sort this out. I really want to get temperature control and sort of the whole closed loop thing where it can be measured and then change it, measured and then change. I can do all the measurement already and that's not a problem. But setting the temperature, that's the trick. So climate is one of my next big frontiers. Marcus says, my missus hates the dusk light bulbs. How would these compare? I don't know what a dusk light bulb is, so it's a little bit hard for me to say. I'm interested, Marcus, maybe just drop a comment. What is it that she doesn't like about the dusk light bulbs? For me, the thing that Charlotte's super cool about all this as well, but one of the points she's made, and I've made a lot before in my blog post on IoT, is I think all this stuff, I'm confident all this stuff needs to be usable by non-tech people. The light switches on the wall need to work just like a light switch works. And then the digital stuff also needs to work in the same way that, well, techies like us would expect the digital stuff to work. But I think I spoke last week about how I'm using the Shellys as a detached switch. So when the light switch on the wall changes, it raises an event in the Shelly, but it doesn't actually turn the power on or off. Now, I take that event in Home Assistant, and then I go, oh, the internet-connected light, which this controls, now I'm going to digitally tell that light to turn itself off. It's still connected to the internet. It's still got power. It's not being detached from the network and then dropping off Home Assistant and all this sort of stuff. But that seems to be a really good model. In fact, I think I'm going to write a little blog post on that because it's something that I took a long time to get to grips with, and it's just beautiful. So interested to hear what the missus doesn't like there, Marcus. Nabila says, do you find that lights turn off when someone is fairly still for a long time, e.g. sitting at a computer? I think you got to define still, because if I was sitting at the computer just watching stuff, yeah, maybe. So this is the one, this little motion sensor I'm holding in my hand is the one that I've still never actually fixed somewhere. I might actually mount it up under the monitor or something, but I don't have a problem with it turning off. Now, I have got, a motion-free period of something like 5 minutes before it turns off in this office, and I just don't have that problem. I think there's sort of a couple of different strategies of dealing with that. One of those strategies might be to increase the amount of time there is before the lights turn off. Maybe make it 10 minutes because you're sitting there really intently reading something and, you know, and then you move. That there's also other parameters that we could use as well. So one of the things I want to play with actually is the Home Assistant app. In fact, I'm going to look this up while I'm talking about this so I get my nomenclature right. But if I go through and I look at my integrations and I look at the mobile stuff, mobile app, and I go to my phone, I can see the BSSID it's connected to. So I can see the MAC address of the access point it's on. So I'm wondering, because I've got so many bloody access points throughout the house, I'm wondering if I can say, hey, if Troy's phone is associated to the BSSID of the wireless adapter, such as this one just here in my hand, that's in my office, then I know that Troy's in the office. And then, for example, with something like the motion sensor, I could say, well, if there's been no motion and if Troy is not in the office, because I always have my phone with me. So even if I walk downstairs to have a coffee, I've got the watch and I could take calls and that sort of thing, but I always tend to have my phone with me. So you could add other criteria like that as well. All right, lots of comments here. So what else is here? What beer are you drinking tonight? Oh, I was afraid someone asked me that. I had Heineken. I always feel guilty saying I had Heineken. But like I said, I was visiting a neighbor. It was like a little engagement party, which was very, very nice of them. For shout out to my engagement party. And I had Heineken. It's like, yeah, why not? You know, at least I'm not going to probably get drunk on it before I do my video. After this, we'll see. I'm going to watch the tennis tonight, so I might even sit there and have a glass of wine or something. Adventure Matt says, I tested Philips Hue Strip versus Lifex, and the Hue definitely dimmed way more. Surprised me. It was also brighter. So this is the thing. It's like not all of these IoT devices are equal, which is probably a pretty obvious thing to say. I've got Hue light strips in some places, but they are expensive, and I've got them partly due to legacy reasons because I bought them before I actually started throwing myself into this stuff and finding much cheaper stuff. They're fine for what I use them for, but having said that, I've got Hue light strips all the way around a really big, you know, almost sort of the entire size of the wall mirror in my entertainment room. And again, part of my IoT series, part 5, I do actually show what that looks like. And that was a lot of money to get that mirror. So I was like, all right, I don't mind paying a little bit more for the good light strips. And also around the back of the TV, similar reasons. But it's interesting how different aspects of these little devices are depending on the manufacturer. So yeah, something like brightness I can totally get. And Ben says, is it the light? I've got one of those sitting on the box waiting for a phone adapter. Yes, it is. So you're talking about the Wi-Fi 6 is a Wi-Fi 6 light. In fact, I've still got the box here somewhere, which I've just chucked in the bin. I'm pretty sure the box in here does say light. It does say, I'm pretty sure it said it on the unit. Huh. I didn't say it on the unit. Wi-Fi 6 access point with dual band 2x2 MIMO. Yes, light. There you go. It says it on that end of the box. So, yep, it is the light. Don't ask me what I think of it yet. It works. I've plugged it in, but I literally only got to play with it very, very quickly before I went out earlier on, and I'm yet to sort of see the rest of it. I forgot to turn on one of my lights. There we go. All right, so that's the access point here. What else is on here? Someone has snow. I feel sorry for you. Could you use the Shellys to control zones for the AC? I highly doubt that. So that the way the controller works for the AC at the moment is there's, and this is for each one of the units, there's one big Daikon-looking unit, which is where you set the fan speed and you set the temperature and are you cooling, are you heating? And again, it feels like it's out of the 80s. And then there's another secondary panel next to it. In fact, I might even take a photo of this after I do this live stream and I'll tweet it. And then if anyone has a better answer for me, that'd be great. And then the second panel, that's where you select the zone that you want to turn on. So, for example, the one which I'll probably take the photo of, the master bedroom is always on, but each of the kids' rooms and my office have separate little buttons to turn those on. And again, this is all sort of stuff that should be digital, but the Shelly is very much about, it's a relay. It's closing a circuit or opening a circuit. So this needs to have a little bit more intelligence just than that. Now, Ben says you can get an IR blaster. I do not have infrared for this thing. So there's not a remote control. It is a panel only. So that's not going to work. Robert Pascal says, presence detection is not very good in IoT land. Would be good to know how you end up getting it working. Look, to be honest, I find that the Akera motion sensors have been really, really good just for looking at is something in the room moving. The biggest issue I've had, and I think this has been my issue, and I'm actually looking at my Zigbee network over here at the moment via the Foscon app here. And the biggest problem I've found is that I've just had devices that just haven't had good Zigbee connectivity. But mechanically, they're actually really good. Now, I've got good Zigbee connectivity here in my office because I've got a Philips Hue Go there, a Philips Hue Go there, and a Philips Hue light strip under the desk. And all of these are not on the Philips Hue app. They are all paired directly through the Conbi on the Home Assistant. So because of that, and they're all powered Zigbee devices, they all act as repeaters. So I've got really good Zigbee signal in just here. But the two little motion sensors that I put in the kids' bathroom just before I went out for my beers before, they don't seem to have good connectivity. So I've just tried to put a couple of repeaters in their rooms and maybe that will fix the problem. Okay, so I think we've covered the IR stuff here. And Robert's made a comment here, temperature control for split systems, have a look at Sensibo. Again, and unless someone has actually used this in Australia, I find that every time I go and have a look at it, it's like, yeah, this works great, like in America or somewhere else on the other side of the world. And unfortunately, it's just one of those things that doesn't seem to be that compatible because Australia, we just have completely different systems. Although, Robert, I do see a second comment here. I use Sensibo on a three Daikin split system in my house. So if I was to Google Sensibo IoT, what does that look like? Make your RC, did I say RC? AC smart. Two Heinekens, damn it. It's never been easy to control your air conditioner. Okay. All right. I shall have a look into Sensibo. And I do see a little Australian flag here, and I've gone to an Australian website. So that's that is interesting. Thanks, Robert. I will check that out. Starwave, when I look at your integrations, I imagine you as a kid from Home Alone looking at his pencil-drawn battle plan. It feels a little bit like that, but it's getting cool that there's so many different sensors in so many different places, and there is an increasingly neat array of things that I can do with those, which is actually kind of fun. Adventure Matt says you need some iBeacons, so inevitably the iBeacons would be to actually track individual devices as they move around the house. So I don't know that I need to go that far, but having, this is making me think now, having the BSS IDs different in pretty much every room, because every room's got a different in-wall ubiquity access point. I think there's a lot of options there. Interesting. So Marcus says, this is in response to his missus not liking the light IoT bulb from Lifex, but she doesn't like the color range. Okay, interesting. So they should have a massive color range. Maybe it's like the brightness or frankly, maybe it's just not liking color. And I totally get that. Like I didn't want color in the ceiling in my entertainment room. I'm quite happy for that not to have that. Incidentally, while I'm here, and I did put out a tweet on this the other day, I'm getting a lot of Facebook ads for those lights that just look like a vertical pole and they just reflect a nice glow onto the wall. Now, I'm always a little bit suspicious of Facebook ads because a lot of them seem to be the same stuff, just rebranded as a different thing, and they all look a little bit crap. But if anyone has ever actually used one of these that is proper IoT and doesn't just have like a crusty old remote, I'm really interested to hear about it. So apparently Lifex, not Lifex, Hue rather, does have one. Someone sent me a link to some of that. I'm just not sure how good they actually are. They always look nice in the pictures, but if anyone has one of those, I'd really like to know about it. For some reason, my light, here's my external light, look at that. My light sometimes gets a little bit blue on the camera, so that's another thing to troubleshoot. If you set your AP radio to low and have more APs, no worries, or check room assistant. Yeah, so again, I think what I might do, I'm curious to have a look if I track the BSS ID that I have over time, and I'm looking at my Home Assistant again just here, and these, of course, are just MAC addresses, so I've got no idea which one is which, but I do see a lot of roaming between different BSS IDs. So it might be interesting. I wonder if in Home Assistant I could associate different names to the different BSS IDs and then actually start to get like room level. Well, it's not going to be perfect because you might still be attached to an AP in a different room and you move in a new one, but start to get sort of room level movements for devices. Interesting. Bramley Geek, my Ring doorbell is pretty much dead. Really need the UI doorbell. You still happy with yours? Yes, with a but. Now, the UI doorbell, the quality is fantastic in terms of the video quality. So I really like that. If I pop it open, it's probably dark outside now. It's getting dark when I came home. I can show people what it looks like. I've tweeted this before. But just as an example, so here's what I'm going to do, and this will sort of probably show you what the problem is, and I'll literally hold the phone up. What's on my phone? Yep, that's fine. As I do this. So here's Unify Protect. Now it's opening. It's opening. Okay, it's finally open. That's an old picture. It's not like that now. Here's the door. Okay, that one was pretty fast. But what I find is that it's often very, very slow to load. The quality of the doorbell and the picture that I see here is super cool. It's really good. It does the whole fisheye thing as well, so you get a very, very wide field of view. The biggest problem I have with this, and I've got recordings of this, is someone comes to the house and they ring the doorbell and we're out, right? Phone's ringing. It's like, oh, this is amazing. You know, I can actually see the doorbell and everything on my device when I'm somewhere else. And then you push the little speaker to try and speak, but there's lag. And you end up just constantly speaking over each other, or by the time the app actually opens, because it can be very, very slow to open, and then you speak, then eventually the voice comes through. I'm not entirely convinced this is Ubiquiti's fault, because one of the things I've found is that the connectivity between my office up here and my doorbell, which is somewhere down there, the connectivity hasn't been great. I literally ran a ping plot against it overnight at one stage, and I found there were a bunch of points where it dropped out completely and other stages where the latency was actually quite high. So I think I would rather actually improve the connectivity through to the doorbell and then give a more informed opinion. But again, what I will say is that the quality of the video is fantastic. The audio is actually pretty good as well, but it's just the slow startup of the app and then the lag in terms of the two-way communication when you're trying to have a voice discussion. But again, that last one might be more a factor of poor coverage to that area than anything else. All right, what else on the list here? Because then I want to talk about something a little bit related but different. Robert mentions here, presence detection, as in, is my phone here in my geofence? So I'm finding, and I've started to monitor this very closely, but I haven't actually done any automations with it. I'm finding that it's pretty good in terms of a rough estimate. So if I get in the car and drive back, it's actually getting it to within about 10 seconds of coming back within the geofence. And if I drive out, same thing. Where I find it's probably going to be a little bit dodgier is if your property is larger, and it's not that the property here is large, but I might go out the back and then I go down to my jetty and then I'm on the water or something, and it looks like it possibly leaves the premises. So a little bit of tweaking. I believe you can actually define the radius. So once you define sort of the lat and long of where home is, you can set a radius as that's your geofence, and you have to move outside of that radius before it will trigger an event to say you're somewhere else. Mark says, Sensibo is okay in Australia but needs IR. Well, that screws up then. Robert, Sensibo is IR. All right, I'm going to tweet a photo of my unit as soon as I get off this off this live stream, and then we'll see if anyone has any ideas about how to connect with this stuff. Now, Ramley Geeks says, I had one Insta and ordered one, never came. I think you might be talking about, for the lights, the vertical lights. They just feels shady. Every time I see one of these, it just feels shady. James says, the Home Assistant integration for Unify may enable you to also track where your device is. Good point, because the Unify integration should hopefully be able to map the BSS ID to the name of the access point, which I logically name after the rooms. That would be kind of cool. All right, so something else a little bit different, and I tweeted some photos the other day. My 3D printer arrived. So I got a Prusa 3D printer. Now, I was asking questions about 3D printers only just over a month ago, because in my epic around Australia road trip, the final destination was at a mate of mine's in South Australia, and he had a 3D printer and he had a presser, and he was saying, oh, this is great, you know, you should get one of these, here's all the reasons. And when I asked people, you know, like, what do you think of presser? What about the other options? Presser just smashed it out of the park. Like, there was a really resoundingly positive bit of feedback on that. So whilst I was sitting there with him, I ordered it so that he could actually help me figure out all the things that I needed. And when I order, there are two options. Now, option one is that they deliver a fully built, configured, setup printer, turnkey, ready to go. Option two is you save $200 and they ship it to you in bits and you have to build the whole thing. Now, apparently it takes a couple of days. From an ROI perspective, I probably should have paid the $200. However, what makes it different is a lot of people said, build it yourself, because if you build it yourself, you'll actually understand how the thing works. So this is what I've been doing. My son Ari and I started building this a couple of days ago. Ari's 11 years old. Like, we had it all out on the table. We started building the thing. Now, after we spent quite some time doing the basics, he did get to the point where I'm like, mate, you know, when you're not here, would you like me just to continue building it? For which he resoundingly said yes. So I'm going to keep building the thing out myself, and I will start tweeting more photos in the thread that I've already got going about the build. Reminds me, I've got another thread going with the Lego Lamborghini Cyan about the build, which I also need to finish. But I am now putting the whole thing together. I will say that I am massively impressed at how Prusa has packaged it up. Like, the packaging of everything is fantastic. The instructions are great. I'm following the instructions from the website, which has loads of great high-quality images, really, really clear text instructions. There's also lots of comments on each step from the community. So community members, for example, there's one point where after you sort of bolt the extrusions and it's like the subframe together, you've got to make sure everything is perfectly flat and you've not got any sort of tilt in it. And reading the comments, there are some great suggestions on how to make sure that you get that right. One of the comments also had a link through to a YouTube video of someone doing the entire install step by step. So if you get lost, you just go to the YouTube video and it's like, oh, yeah, here's where you plug the widget into the grommet, you know, or whatever it is. So far, and this is very, very early days, the process is actually really good fun. I'm really glad I bought the Prusa, not having actually printed anything yet, but so far, really glad I bought the Prusa, and also really glad that I bought it in kit form and that I'm building the sucker myself. So I will definitely share more of that as the whole thing progresses. All right, so this is pretty much everything I had in my list. If you have questions or comments, please drop them into the chat while I go back and look at some of the other ones here before I wrap up and go and watch the tennis. So it's the Australian Open at the moment, and I want to go watch Nick Kyrgios play tonight, because partly because he's Australian and partly because he always loses his shit and it's kind of fun to watch. James says, yeah, the doorbell works for me, but latency for video makes two-way kind of useless. Yeah, I'm with you, James. So I'm curious also, James, do you have good connectivity through to the doorbell? So do you have low latency? Is it stable? Is it the doorbell itself? And part of the reason why I'm asking is that I do talk to the Ubiquiti folks a lot. As I said before, they send me stuff. So the Wi-Fi 6 unit arrived in the mail. It's fantastic. I'll give it a go. But I give them very, very candid feedback as well. And I do actually want to grab some of the video I had, which showed it was painful to communicate, and send that to them. So I'm just interested to hear from the community as well. James says, it's a little average connectivity-wise. But, you know, it's like I'm in Australia and I've got video and audio and I'm live streaming out across the world. You kind of think that, like, from my doorbell down there up to here, we should be able to get fairly low bitrate audio and 1080p video streaming okay. So I just kind of feel like, yeah. One of the tests I might do with this actually is to see that if I'm on the local network here and not having to go out over the internet, is it any better? So I might actually start to do some more tests. I'll grab those videos, I'll send them to Ubiquiti, and hopefully we'll get some answers from them. But to the original question, from what I've seen of the other doorbells as well, certainly if you're going down the Ubiquiti ecosystem and you've got an NVR and you've actually got recording capability, and especially if you start getting more cameras as well, it is a really, really nice setup. Now, actually, on that, so there's something that I do really want to get from Ubiquity, but it might be a big ask. I just learned, only just yesterday, of a new camera within the Protect range. So have a look at this camera. Where is it? Products over here. There we go. And there's Unify Protect. So they have a Unify Protect G4 PTZ, a 4K ultra high performance pan tilt zoom camera. 4K, 24 frames a second, 22 times optical zoom, and it has pan and tilt. So you can control the device remotely. And it looks epic too. It's all in like a matte black. Looks super, super cool. Retails for $1,800 as well, American. So that's a lot of cash. So I will not be buying one of those with my own money. But if Ubiquity chooses to send me one, I will be very happy to share the results of it. So that looks really, really, really cool. And I can see me getting up on the roof again if one of these does arrive. James, full strength beer, obviously. Or if there's any more beer, it will be. What else we got here? Any update on the Atlassian situation? So Atlassian, I shared a story a couple of days ago about nation state actors exploiting vulnerabilities in Atlassian products. And look, I share a lot of stories. I have a very brief read through. Is it legitimate? Is it noteworthy? Yes, okay, I'll find it. I tweeted. I got a lot of replies the other day that were, it was kind of funny. So it sort of broke down into two camps. This is only happening to like unpatched Atlassian stuff. That's usually what it happens to, yes. But a whole bunch of other people popped up and said, basically, the upgrade path for Atlassian is it's not what you call the happy path. And because it's such a painful thing, a lot of people don't update their software. Regardless, obviously, there was a vulnerability there. It is being leveraged allegedly state actors. I really don't know any more than that. I just, they were just sort of the two interesting things that popped up. Unpatched software and patching the software is apparently painful. What else we got in here? Rambling Geek, a doorbell with RJ45 would be awesome. You're right, it would. Wouldn't help me though, because I've got no hope in hell of running RJ45 through to this particular location. I harbor a dream of one day designing and building a house, and it will have Cat 6 everywhere, you know, like even out to the front gate. And there'll be places to put cameras that don't involve me mounting them in dodgy places. It seems like most of the doorbells I've seen, certainly the Rings and the Nests and obviously the Ubiquity stuff, is all Wi-Fi. But again, I don't feel that the requirements, the bandwidth and latency requirements for a doorbell come anywhere near the capability of what we can get with good Wi-Fi. So I'm just not convinced that it's a connectivity problem. I think that that might be a little part of it in my case, but I think a part of it as well is that it's just a slow product to start up, and that it's just a little bit glitchy. I will feed this back to Ubiquity and we'll see what comes back. Second question on Atlassian. I think we've sort of covered the Atlassian stuff. Hackers claim that someone has bought Cyberpunk 2077 and other source code solved from CD Projekt Red. Do you believe them? I did share something from CD Projekt Red the other day about a data breach. As best I know, that is legitimate. I honestly have not looked at it very closely, so I can't give you an informed opinion on that at the moment. Unified cams other than G3 Flex are way too expensive. Didn't cost me much. No, I think it depends. I've had things like Netgear Arlo before, which I did actually buy myself, which were fairly well priced, but honestly, quality-wise, they just do not even come close to comparing to the Ubiquity stuff. Go and have a look at some independent reviews, because the reviews that I've seen have rated the Ubiquity stuff really, really highly. But yeah, some of it does get expensive. And yeah, $1,800 for a pan tilt zoom camera is a shitload of money for a camera. It does actually say it's sold out. So, you know, maybe they have positioned it at the right point for the market that buys that sort of equipment. I don't know. I imagine that they've got product people who work that stuff out. Anyone heard about COME? So, yes. Now, COME is an acronym for, I believe, Collection of Multiple Breaches. It's been in the news a bit lately insofar as the headlines have read something like 3.1 billion credentials are out there circulating around. every story I read just made it feel like credential stuffing lists from lots of different places, which sometimes is new. Certainly there was an incident that I loaded a few months ago where there was a lot of new stuff, and it was from a lot of breaches that hadn't been disclosed before. This was the SIT zero day one, new and noteworthy. This one didn't read that way. I do have the comb data. It's about an 18 gig zipped file from memory. I had a bit of a look through it. It felt very, very repetitive and very, very reused. So to be honest, at the moment, I've just filed it away. And unless there's something new and noteworthy that pops out of it, comb goes into the list of more repurposed pre-existing breaches. So that is a comb situation. Rambling geek, I cabled my house, still didn't put in enough places. One of the things that I am finding is wherever possible, I'm not using cables. And look, I get the whole idea of just cable all the things and then you never have RF interference or any of that sort of thing. But for things like my printers, I mean, the printers are Wi-Fi enabled. They work great. My laptop's sitting here on the desk. The only time I ever wire that is if I need like high-speed transfers and that sort of thing. So to be honest, that the only time I'm really needing cables is for PoE stuff. And the PoE stuff is things like the cameras. So that's something which needs a little bit more work. But had I the choice, then yeah, I would definitely be cabling to every corner of the house. And then I might just run in-wall access points or something from each corner of the house. I would like to have an access point like literally in this, our gate with the doorbell has got like a little entryway over the top, but I'd have it in the roof there. I would like not to have cables in places where people could go and plug something in. I think most people that would actually want to physically gain access to this place probably just want to try and steal your car or something like that, but I would feel better if I didn't have that sort of level of digital access. But again, you could just mount that up inside ceilings, which would then be exceptionally hard to access. What about a doorbell that runs network over the power line? Hold my beer. Now, funny you should mention that. So the reason actually I thought my access point and camera in the boat should have dropped off is because I do have Ethernet over power, which runs from my server cabinet and then through the magic of the power lines and terminates out in the boat shed area. I don't think that's the problem. I don't think that's what's out at the moment, although I should try rebooting that. I thought it was more likely to be the access point itself. But it's always just a little bit flaky running Ethernet over power. I never find it's a very reliable, predictable experience. I'm just reading these final comments here. Cat6 everything and only use Wi-Fi as a last resort. I'll give you a good example of things like I got the new Xbox the other day. And that one is now sitting next to the old Xbox. I just left them on Wi-Fi. There's honestly, for my purposes, nothing that I gain from having more cables running with those things. And I've got such good Wi-Fi coverage, at least inside the house, not so much the doorbell, that it just hasn't bothered me. So I'm quite happy going down that path. Ben says, should get the Unify 6 long-range access points just for the higher bandwidth. So I do have an LR access point somewhere up there in my cupboard. That might be something I could even point at the doorbell. Maybe I can fix that problem with that. But look, honestly, like all of these things, as many of you probably know, become hobby projects. They become things that we just keep tweaking with and hacking away at and trying to make work as best they can whilst actually trying to get our jobs done and make a living too. And that's pretty much where it is for me. So the doorbell thing is, it works enough and the effort to fix it is high enough that I've kind of held off going down that path yet. But look, I'll get to one afternoon somewhere and I'll have a few hours to kill and I'll try and do that more properly. Anyway, look, thank you very much for watching. I am going to call it there because that tennis is about to start and I've got to go and get myself some dinner because everything was a bit late today. Next week, I will do this again and I will do it in the morning. So I look forward to catching everyone then. And by then, I will have a lot more IP addresses in my house, courtesy of all those downlights and all those Shellys that are going to go in. And I'll be able to talk more about that then. Cheers, folks.